নয়, গোপী জন বল্লভ গিরিবর ধরে, গোপী জন বল্লভ গিরিবর ধরে, যশোদ নন্দন ভজ জন রঞ্জন, যশোদ নন্দন ভজ জন রঞ্জন, যমুনা চিরাবন চরে, যমুনা চিরাবন চরে, জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জ বিহারে, BBD Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Guntaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Go Pemanandi Hari Hari Bol. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, Bhagavate Vasudevaya, Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 9, Text 42. Aham Atmatmanam Dattaha, Aham Atmatmanam Dattaha, Vishtaha san prayasamapi, Vishta san prayasamapi, Ato mai ratim koryad, Ato mai ratim koryad, Dehadir yat krite priyaha, Dehadir yat krite priyaha, aham atmatmanatma, aham atmatmanam dataha, Krishna san prayasam api, ato mahi ratim kuryad, dehadir yat krite priyaha. Vaishnavis. Aham, I am. Atma, the Supersoul. Atmanam, of all other souls. Dataha, director. Prashtaha, the dearest. San, being. Prayasam, of all dear things. Api, certainly. Ataha, therefore. Mai, unto me. Ratim, attachment. Kuryat, one should do. Deha adibi. So, deha adi, the body and mind. Yat krite, on whose account. Priyaha, very dear. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. I am the Supersoul of every individual. This is Lord Garbhodakshaya Vishnu speaking. I am the Supersoul of every individual. I am the Supreme Director and the Dearest. People are wrongly attached to the gross and subtle bodies, but they should be attached to me only. Purport. The Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, is the dearest in both the conditioned and liberated states. When a person does not know that the Lord is the only dearmost object, then he is in the conditioned state of life. And when he knows perfectly well that the Lord is the only dearmost object, he is considered to be liberated. There are degrees of knowing one's relationship with the Lord, depending on the degree of realization as to why the Supreme Lord is the dearest object of every living being. The real reason is clearly stated in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 15, text 7, Mamai Vamsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. The living entities are eternally parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord. The living entity is called the Atma, and the Lord is called the Paramatma. The living entity is called Brahman, and the Lord is called Para-Brahman, or the Parameshvara, Ishvara, Paramakrishna. The conditioned souls who do not have self-realization accept the material body as the dearmost. The idea of the dearmost is then spread all over the body, both concentrated and extended. The attachment for one's own body and its extensions, like children and relatives, is actually developed on the basis of the real living entity. As soon as the real living entity is out of the body, even the body of the most dear son is no longer attractive. Therefore, the living spark, or the eternal part of the Supreme, is the real basis of affection, and not the body. Because the living entities are also parts of the whole living entity, the Supreme Living Entity is the factual basis of affection for all. One who has forgotten the basic principle of his love for everything has only flickering love because he is in Maya. The more one is affected by the principle of Maya, the more he is detached from the basic principle of love. One cannot factually love anything unless he is fully developed in loving service of the Lord. In the present verse, stress is given to focusing love upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The word kuryat is significant here. This means one must have it. It is just to stress that we must have more and more attachment to the principle of love. The influence of Maya is experienced by the part and parcel spiritual entity, but it cannot influence the Supersoul, the Paramatma. The Mayavadi philosophers accepting the influence of Maya on the living entity want to become one with the Paramatma, but because they have no actual love for Paramatma, they remain. Behavior keeps him everlastingly a poor man. On the other hand, a person who knows how to utilize wealth can quickly become a rich man, even with a small credit balance. The eyes and the sun are very intimately related because without sunlight, the eyes are unable to see. But the other parts of the body, being attached to the sun as a source of warmth, take more advantage of the sun than do the eyes. Without possessing affection for the sun, the eyes cannot bear the rays of the sun. Or, in other words, such eyes have no capacity to understand the utility of the sun's rays. Similarly, The empiric philosophers, despite their theoretical knowledge of Brahman, cannot utilize the mercy of the supreme Brahman because they lack affection. So many impersonal philosophers remain everlastingly under the influence of Maya because although they indulge in theoretical knowledge of Brahman, they do not develop affection for Brahman, nor do they have any scope for development of affection because of their defective method. A devotee of the sun god, even though devoid of eyesight, can see the sun god as he is, even from this planet, whereas one who is not a devotee of the sun cannot even bear the glaring sunlight. Similarly, by devotional service, even though one is not on the level of a jnani, one can see the personality of Godhead within himself due to his development of pure love. In all circumstances, one should try to develop love of Godhead, and that will solve all contending problems. Om Aginatamidam Dashajanam Janashalakaya Chakshuram Militamyena Tasma Sri Gudavay Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitamina Bhutale Swayamupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. So in the last sentence of the purport here, Prabhupada sums up what he was saying in the previous, I guess, three paragraphs, that in all circumstances, one should try to develop love of Godhead, and that will solve all contending problems. And so in the second chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, text 7, I guess it's Sutta Goswami speaking at that point, and he says, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha Janiyati Asyu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayata Hoitakam, that by developing devotional service or love for the personality of Godhead, one automatically acquires causeless knowledge and detachment. And when you acquire causeless knowledge and detachment, that takes care of, that solves all the contending problems. As you know, mentioned by Lord Vishnu here in the translation itself, that people are wrongly attached to the gross and subtle bodies, but they should be attached to me only. So by developing this love for Krishna, bhakti yoga, as mentioned, one becomes, develops causeless knowledge and detachment and becomes free from that false attachment to the gross and subtle bodies. So there's different ways in which we can develop our love for Krishna. The general principle is there's 9 ways. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasham, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. There's 9 processes of devotional service. So Prabhupada would say that you could engage in all of them, or even if you just engage in ultimately one of them, nicely, well, you can develop your love for Krishna just by doing one process properly. So the first process, of course, is Shravanam. And in different places, even in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada has said that Shravanam is the first and most important of the principles. And so that's definitely a way that we can, a process we could take advantage of to develop our love for Krishna. Something that I've had a lot of... that's helped me a lot as far as Shravanam goes is, you know, sometimes when you, if you're feeling your devotional battery is getting a little low, or even if it's fine, but something I do is I've just started, just did this last week, did it again recently. I go back to 1966 lectures of Prabhupada. There's a website called Prabhupada Vani. There's probably others that you could do the same thing. But I just, and it allows you to zero in on the specific things you want to listen to. So I start off with 1966, and I started off at the very first Chaitanya Charitamrita lecture Prabhupada gave in 1966, and I'm systematically listening in chronological order to the lectures that he gave on the Chaitanya Charitamrita, one after the other. And it's, I mean, it's been enlivening. You know, you get absorbed in it. All sorts of far out things. The philosophy's there, and Prabhupada tells different pastimes, you know, from the Mahabharata for this, for that, you know, everything's there. And when I finish that, when I get up to about 1968, I'm going to go back and do that for the same thing for the Bhagavad Gita lectures. So it's definitely something that's worked for me. So I just wanted to share that with everybody. And there's a reason why it works, is because, and this occurred to me as I was preparing for class, that Prabhupada, somebody very special. And this analogy came to my mind. Just like Arjuna. Arjuna was a pure devotee. And in his own right, he was a very, you know, a very amazing person. I mean, he was a great kshatriya, he was a great warrior, highly intelligent, etc. But sometimes, in the battle of quitting, there's actually three instances that came to my mind. Sometimes, in addition to what a capable person he was, you know, the prowess he had, which ultimately comes from Krishna, Purusham, how's it go? Purusham Vishu, I'm the ability in man. But in addition to that, sometimes Krishna helped. Sometimes Krishna jumped in there and gave him some additional help. And three examples of that, and I'll present them in chronological order. One was the incident with Jayadrath. Jayadrath attempted to kidnap Draupadi. I think it was when the Pandavas were incognito. So the Pandavas caught him. You know, they defeated him. And they were going to kill him. But Maharaj Yudhisthira said, "Nah, don't kill him. They just did something to him. Maybe I think they cut his hair." Yeah, they, like Krishna did with Rukmi, they just cut pieces of his hair. I mean, humiliated him and sent him off. So he was really humiliated. He felt really humiliated. He was a Kshatriya. So he took, he prayed to Lord Shiva. I mean, he performed penances, you know, and to Lord Shiva to get a benediction. And Lord Shiva appeared and offered him a benediction. And but Jayadrath said, "I want the benediction that I can kill the Pandavas." And Lord Shiva said, "No, sorry, can't give you that benediction." He said, "Well, the best I could do is that I'll enable you, allow you, I'll give you the benediction that for one day you could prevent them from, you know, you could frustrate them and not allow, you know, prevent them from achieving their objective." So, okay, but something's better than nothing. So he took that benediction. So it just so happened that on, I can't remember which day of the battle it was, but on one day, the two Kauravas and Pandavas were fighting, and there was this particular formation that the Kauravas set up, Chakravyuha. And Abhimanyu knew how to get in to it, but he didn't know how to come out. So, and they, you know, they felt confident that, and he told Yudhisthira that, but then they said, "Okay, don't worry about it. You just get in there, and we'll follow you in, you know, and we'll support you." So he went in, and he was fighting very valiantly and, you know, really creating a lot of, you know, turmoil for the Kauravas. But what happened was then Jayadrath made use of his benediction, and he prevented the other Pandavas from entering in to support him. So what happened was they all ganged up on him. Five different Kshatriyas, they all ganged up on Abhimanyu, who was fighting very valiantly. He was only 16 years old, and they killed him. So when Arjuna learned about that, you know, that was made possible by because of Jayadrath, because he got this benediction from Lord Shiva, then he took a vow that the next day, I'm going to kill Jayadrath. If I don't, by sundown, the next day, I'm going to enter into fire. So next day, the battle came, and the Kauravas, they knew about that. They, you know, it was public. So they put him way in the back. They put Jayadrath way in the back so that, you know, Arjuna would pretty much have to go through the whole army in order to get to Jayadrath. So the battle was, you know, going on, and Arjuna was kind of doing it. He was making a lot of progress, but, you know, time was running out. There was a lot of big-time warriors to contend with, and, you know, he's getting further and further and further, but then the sun went down. Well, the sun was no longer visible, let's say. The sun was no longer visible. And the Kauravas were in ecstasy because they thought, okay, that's it. You know, he's going to have to enter into the fire now. And they were, you know, so happy because Arjuna would have to kill himself because he would, you know, he'd keep his word because he was a Kshatriya. And then, but Krishna, it actually was Krishna's trick. Krishna made it just kind of, there was some heavy clouds or something, and he made it seem like the sun had set, but it actually hadn't. It was just some clouds, and before they knew it, the clouds dissipated, and then there was the sun again, and then Arjuna went and got him. You see? So Krishna did that. Krishna, you know, came in there and gave Arjuna some special help. That was one. The other one, another example is when Arjuna was fighting against Bhishma Dev, at one point in the Battle of Kurukshetra, Duryodhana was accusing Bhishma Dev, "You're not fighting at your full strength, you know, because, and I know the reason, because you have special affection for the Pandavas." And Bhishma Dev, as a Kshatriya, he became kind of a little insulted by that. He said, "Oh, you think I'm, you know, showing, favoritism here? Tomorrow I will kill all five of the Pandavas, you know, and I'll do it with these five arrows." So Duryodhana said, "Okay, good." He was happy to hear that. So Duryodhana said, "Okay, can I keep those five arrows?" And Duryodhana said, Bhishma Dev said, yeah, sure. Here, you keep the 5 hours, give them back to me tomorrow. So then Arjuna, Krishna being, you know, omniscient, told Arjuna, okay, you know how Duryodhana, remember when you saved his life? Because one time the Kauravas were on like a military expedition, and they were coming, they came upon some territory that was being occupied by the Gandharvas. So they thought, oh, okay, we're just going to pass through here. You know, who the heck are these Gandharvas? And so they got into a fight with the Gandharvas, who was, you know, Upadevas. They're very powerful. They're in between human beings and demigods, and they lost. And Duryodhana was captured, and they were going to kill him. But this came to the attention of the Pandavas, and they were glad. I mean, well, at least Bhima was glad. But Maharaj Yudhisthira said, no, these are, you know, they're our relatives. You know, we can't allow the Gandharvas to kill him. And so Arjuna went, and they released him on the request of the Pandavas, because there's a connection there between the Gandharvas and Indra, Arjuna being the son of Indra? Right, Arjuna being the son of Indra, so there was a connection there, and they released him. But once the same thing happened, Duryodhana was really humiliated by that. So he was really humiliated. Oh yeah, so right. So he gave a benediction, but he offered a benediction to Arjuna at that time. That okay, so you know, you help me here. So anytime you need something, you let me know. And So Krishna said, okay, now you go to Duryodhana and take advantage of that benediction he offered you. So Arjuna went. It was after the battle on the day, and Duryodhana said, okay, Arjuna, so nice to see you. You know, that's how Kshatriyas were. After the battle, that was the culture. They manifested friendship. So he's saying, so, you know, you want, what do you want? Do you want you want your kingdom without a fight? Okay, we're prepared to do that. And whatever you want, you know, just let me know. And so Arjuna said, no, just give me those 5 arrows that you got from Bhishma earlier. And he said, oh. So, you know, Krishna was involved. So anyway, Arjuna got those arrows. But then the next day, so Bhishma said, okay. When he heard about that, Bhishma understood that this is Krishna, you know, using his mystic powers and everything. So Bhishma took a vow and said, unless Krishna breaks his promise... And, you know, because Krishna promised that he would not take part in the battle as a fight, you know, fighting. He just would do some service. That's why how he wound up with Arjuna as Arjuna chariot driver. So Bhishma said, unless Krishna breaks his promise, I'm going to kill his friend Arjuna. So so the battle went on, and Bhishma Dev was fighting in such a way that, according, you know, Prabhupada said that it was looking like he was going to kill Arjuna. And it got to the point where, you know, he broke his chariot, and Arjuna was like just about like in a very vulnerable position, and Bhishma Dev could have just finished him off. But then Krishna broke his promise. Krishna grabbed the chariot, a broken chariot wheel, and started rushing towards Bhishma Dev in a very angry mood, you know, to kill him. And then Bhishma Dev said, okay, you know, that's it. You broke your promise, so I've achieved my objective here. So there's no need for me to kill Arjuna. So he didn't. So once again, Krishna intervened, gave special help. And the third example would be with Karna, when they were fighting after, you know, this incident, and it was looking like Karna was going to defeat Arjuna, and then Karna's chariot wheel got stuck in the mud, and he went down to. He told Arjuna, "Okay, look." You know, that was the Kshatriya etiquette was that you don't attack somebody when they're not able to, you know, in a situation like that. So he said to Arjuna, you know, okay, I'm going to pull my chariot out of the mud here. Just hang on a second. So he got down to do that, and then Krishna told Arjuna, okay, now kill him. You know, and he said, I can't do that. That's, you know, that's against the code of the Kshatriyas. And Krishna said, where was the code of the Kshatriyas when they disrobed Draupadi? You know, where was the code of the Kshatriyas then? And then Krishna told him, you better kill him now. This is your chance. And Arjuna went, okay. And you know, Karna said, you know, saw him, you know, kind of getting ready to shoot the arrow and kill him. And Karna's going, hey, what are you doing? Arjuna went, and he knocked him out. So anyway, so the point is that Arjuna was a very special devotee in his own right, but sometimes Krishna kind of stepped in and gave him some special assistance. So I see Prabhupada like that too. Prabhupada was amazing. You know, he's a brilliant person, inspired, incredible, you know, and sometimes in addition to all that, in addition to how incredible Prabhupada was on his own in the first place, so to speak, you know, of course it's never on your own, but Krishna above and beyond that sometimes gave Prabhupada some special inspiration. And Prabhupada said that himself. You know, Prabhupada said there was one, it's happened a few different occasions. Devotees would be there and Prabhupada would be preaching to some guests or something, and they would leave to do some service or something like that. And then, you know, Prabhupada would send for them. He said, hey, he send somebody, tell so-and-so to come back here. Tell Krishna Maharaj to come back to the room or something like that. You know, there's about two or three different occasions where this happened. You hear about it on the Prabhupada memories. So on one occasion, so Prabhupada said, so why are you leaving? So, well, we had some service to do, Prabhupada. You know, we wanted to, we thought that would be a better utilization of our time. And Prabhupada said, no, you should, you know, when I'm preaching, you should stay here and, you know, here. And he said, do you know the shlokas? And he asked a question about one shloka. The devotee didn't know it. He said, are you reading the books? And they said, well, yeah, Prabhupada, we're reading, but maybe not as much as we should be. And Prabhupada said, you know, he says, I myself read these books. And he was trying to encourage them, emphasize how important it was to read the books. He says, I myself read these books. And they were silent. He said, do you know why I read these books? And they said, well, no. He said, Prabhupada said, because I did not write these books. He said, when I sit down to write these books, Krishna comes and tells me, dictates to me what to write. And that was, right, you've heard that on the Prabhupada memories in so many different words. And that happened to a few different devotees, a few different occasions. So, yeah, Prabhupada was, you know, doing these purports. And, I mean, sometimes when you read these purports, you can feel that. I mean, at least I do. I just, probably it's just a sentiment, but I'm reading it and I think, wait, wow. This is like incredible. This is Prabhupada, really. This is amazing. I mean, he had to. This is amazing purport. You know, the points that are being made and the command of the English language and just the whole thing. It's just like you really can get a feeling for that. Yeah, Prabhupada was receiving supernatural help to write these purports, in addition to the fact that he was brilliant in his own right. So, anyway, so that's why when we take shelter of hearing from Prabhupada, hearing his lectures, reading his books, that's a surefire process for developing love for Krishna, you know, helping us make progress towards developing our love for Krishna. Another thing that's very helpful in developing our love for Krishna is preaching. And there's a reason for that. And I'm going to read an excerpt from a lecture Prabhupada gave. 1966. This is an example of how you get inspiration from listening to these different lectures. So in this one section of the lecture, Prabhupada said, we should be in love with God. Oh, God has supplied us so many things. Therefore, pure devotees, they like to supply God. They want to become order supplier of God and not make God as order supplier. God wants that make everyone God conscious, Krishna conscious. He sends his son. He sends his books. He comes himself. That is his mission. He wants that all these suffering living entities, they should become Krishna conscious and be happy. God wants this. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly stated. So if you want to supply the want of God, if you become yourself Krishna conscious and try to serve God by spreading this mission all over the world, that is the best service. That is the best service to the Lord. To become yourself a field worker. Prabhupada says it twice. Field worker. God is very much anxious to get back his mad sons. In this material world, everyone is mad, crazy. It is a difference of degrees only. I may be more crazy than yourself. You may be more crazy than someone else. But we are all crazies. As soon as we are fixed up in Krishna consciousness, though, our craziness is vanished. Yes, that is our constitutional position. It goes on to say, so the part is to serve the whole. We are part and parcel. So this is a chance, this material manifestation, this manifestation of the material world is a chance to have that opportunity. and especially this human form of life, is the boon for understanding Krishna consciousness. If we miss this opportunity, then we are unfortunate. And he repeats, unfortunate. So the point is that one of the characteristics of love is that you put the desires, you put the desires of the person you're loving before your own desires. You see, that when there's fulfilling the desires of the person you're trying to love is more important to you than even having your own desires fulfilled. And the supreme example of that is the gopis themselves. And that's, well, there's sure many examples, but that's a great example. The gopis, Prabhupada said in one lecture, this is a very short excerpt, Krishna says positively, I like these things. So we have to offer Krishna what he likes. And then Krishna likes Radharani. Therefore, all the gopis, they are trying to push Radharani to Krishna. Krishna likes, this is how the gopis are thinking, Krishna likes this gopi. All right, push her. That is Krishna consciousness. To satisfy the senses of Krishna, not to satisfy my senses. That is bhakti. That is called prema, love for Krishna. Ah, Krishna likes this, I must give him this. So, example, the gopis, of course the gopis, don't you think the gopis would like to be with Krishna themselves? Of course they would. But they're thinking, but I know that Krishna would even enjoy more being with Radharani. So rather than try to put myself forward to take advantage of my opportunity to be with Krishna, let me see if I could make an arrangement so that Krishna could be with Radharani, because that's even going to be more pleasing to Krishna. So even at the expense of fulfilling their own desire, they want to be with Krishna. It's more important to them to see that Krishna's desire is fulfilled. So that's why preaching helps us. It's Krishna's desire. We just heard it. It's Krishna's desire that all the crazies, you know, all the living entities who are here in this material world, go back to him. So when we're out preaching, when we're trying to help other people, bring other people to Krishna, we're fulfilling Krishna's desire. And fulfilling Krishna's desire, as we just heard, that's love. That is bhakti. That is called prema, love. When you try to satisfy the senses of Krishna, you try to please, fulfill the desires of the person that you're, you know, so-called loving. So that's the point. And that's real love. And that's actually, real love. And Prabhupada made, on one occasion, he made a lecture once again that he gave. He makes a clear distinction between what real love is and what real love is not. And can't remember what the lecture was, but this was transcribed, and it appears in the book Science of Self-Realization, this particular section. Prabhupada says, sex is animalistic. It is not love, but lust. Sex means mutual satisfaction of senses, and that is lust. All this lust is taking place under the name of love, and out of illusion, people mistake this lust for love. So that's the illusion of the material world. The people are thinking that's what love is, but according to Prabhupada, that's not love, that's lust. But he goes on to say, and this can sort of further confirms the point we were just making, he says, real love says people are suffering from a lack of Krishna consciousness. Let us do something for them so that they can understand the value of life. So same point again, that according to Prabhupada, that's love. And the reason being, because Krishna wants all the parts and parcels to, you know, back again. He doesn't want them in Maya. So when somebody does something to try to fulfill that desire of Krishna, that's love. Rishikena, Rishikesha, Sevanam, Bhakti. So when you use your senses to engage them in pleasing the master of the senses, then that's love. Okay, so. And that mood, you know, that mood of wanting to please the senses of Krishna, please Krishna by this activity of preaching. It was very much approved by Prabhupada, to the point where when in Atlanta, Georgia, back in 1975, he met with the book distributors, and they were having like a discussion. Tripurari Brahmacharya at the time, now Maharaj, was the spokesman. So at one point in that conversation with Prabhupada, Tripurari made the comment, and then Prabhupada responded. So Tripurari said, sometimes the devotees ask if they can take birth again distributing books for you. So, you know, he's expressing that sentiment that, the, you know, your disciples are were really into preaching. And so so somebody might think, well, Prabhupada would say that's nice sentiment, but, you know, go back to Godhead. But anyway, this is what Prabhupada said, at least on that occasion. He said, very good. That is real devotion. A devotee does not want to go to Vaikuntha Loka or any liberation. They are satisfied with the service. That is pure devotion. Distributing books. I'm distributing books for the benefit of going to Krishna. That is selfishness. But I want simply to distribute the books without any remuneration, without any my personal benefit. That is pure devotee. Just like Prahlad Maharaj said, I do not wish to go to Vaikuntha unless I can take all these rascals with me. That is pure devotee. Pure devotion does not mean, and Prabhupada trailed off and he digressed and said, he's always referring to the person who's preaching. He's always under the protection of Krishna. What is the use of going to Vaikuntha? Wherever he stays, that is Vaikuntha. That is pure devotional service. Mama janmani janmanishvare bhavatad bhaktir hoi tiki twai. Life after life, I may go on with this business. I don't want anything else. That is pure devotion. So Prabhupada approved of this, very much so, approved of this attitude of trying to love Krishna by, you know, engaging other people in Krishna's service, bringing people to Krishna. Now, just to avoid creating the conflict in anybody's mind, sometimes Archita, when he gives class, he always emphasizes that we should try to go back to Godhead. And that's correct too. And you could say, well, how could both things be correct? Well, I'll try to give a little story which I think kind of gives us some understanding of how both things could be correct. Once there was a discussion, it turned into an argument practically between two disciples, very prominent disciples of Srila Prabhupada, Mother Yamuna Madhavisa Prabhu. So Madhavisa Prabhu was saying there's no difference between Krishna and Balaram. Except for the color. Except for the color, there's no difference. And then Yamuna was saying, no, that's not correct, you know. There's a difference. And then she stated some, I can't remember the point she made, also quoting from the books, you know. So Tamal Krishnaraj was overhearing this argument. They weren't resolving it, you know. They weren't coming to any agreement. So he went to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, I was just overhearing like a discussion, an argument between Yamuna and Madhavisa, and, you know, Madhavisa was saying there's no difference between Krishna and Balaram. And Prabhupada said, he's right. And then he said, but Mother Yamuna was saying that there is a difference between Krishna and Balaram. And he mentioned the, you know, the reason that she gave. And Prabhupada thought about it and he said, she's right. And then Tamal Krishna went to Prabhupada, but Prabhupada, they can't both be right. And Prabhupada thought about it and he said, you're right. So Tamal Krishna said, who's right? And Prabhupada says, that's for you to decide. So it's like a, you know, chincha beta, a beta tapa. You know, it's one of these things. It's good to, if you have the desire that you want to come back and distribute books birth after birth, that's, you're perfectly okay in feeling like that. If you have the desire that you want to go back to Godhead, that's, I think that's also okay. It's not, you know, nothing wrong with that. And one last final point that we should make, you know, bringing us kind of back down to earth here, because we're talking about, you know, coming, taking birth again and again to pre. But love, because this purport's all about love, you know, it says how one has to try to develop love of Godhead and that will solve all the problems. And it's mentioned throughout the purport here. Love begins with obedience. That's a very important point. You know, just bringing it right, as I said, back down to earth. Love begins with obedience. And a very good example of, you know, where Prabhupada kind of zeroed in on this point was in his discussion with Father Emmanuel. It's in the, once again, it's in that book, Science of Self-Realization. And they were talking. Father Emmanuel was, you know, pretty favorable and was definitely totally respectful and not argumentative like that Cardinal Danilou. He was very respectful and appreciative. And it up here. Ah, here we go. So at one point in the conversation, hang on. Got it. At one point in the conversation, his Father Emmanuel says to Prabhupada, may I ask a question? We Christians also preach love of God and we try to realize love of God and render service to Him with all our heart and all our soul. You know, they got that sentiment there, okay? He says, now, what is the difference between your movement and ours? Why do you send your disciples to Western countries to preach love of God when the gospel of Jesus Christ is propounding the same message? Srila Prabhupada, the problem is that Christians do not follow the commandments of God. Do you agree? And his father Emmanuel said, yes, to a large extent, you're right. And Prabhupada said, then what is the meaning of Christians' love for God? If you do not follow the orders of God, then where is your love? Therefore, we have come to teach what it means to love God. If you love him, you cannot be disobedient to his orders. And if you're disobedient, your love is not true. So then a visitor, another person happened to be there, said, can you say in what way Christians are disobedient? So Prabhupada goes, yes, the first point is that they violate the commandment, thou shalt not kill, by maintaining slaughterhouses. Do you agree that this commandment is being violated? Father Emmanuel goes, personally, I agree. He's a highly placed guy, you know, in the Catholic or Christian thing. He agreed. So Prabhupada goes on to say, good. So if the Christians want to love God, they must stop killing animals. Father Emmanuel goes, but isn't the most important point, and he's going to go back and say, isn't it just the most important point? And Prabhupada cut him off. So Prabhupada goes, if you miss one point, there is a mistake in your calculation. Regardless of what you add or subtract after that, the mistake is already in the calculation, and everything that follows will also be faulty. We cannot simply accept the part of the scripture we like and reject what we don't like and still expect to get the result. For example, a hen lays eggs with its back part and eats with its beak. A farmer may consider, the front part of the hen is very expensive because I have to feed it. Better to cut it off. But if the head is missing, there will be no eggs anymore because the body is dead. Similarly, if we reject the difficult part of the scriptures and obey the part we like, such an interpretation will not help us. We have to accept all the injunctions of the scripture as they are given, not only those that suit us. If you do not follow the first order, thou shalt not kill, then where is the question of love of God? So we can it's in and of itself, that's a very, very powerful thing. But we can, you know, apply that to our own selves. If we cannot follow the first order, no illicit sex, no meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling, etc., right? Then where's the question of loving Krishna? We have to, you know, we have to apply this to ourselves too. We have to be obedient to the basic stuff. We can't, you know, no point fantasizing about elevated subjects of Krishna praying. Obedience has to be there first. We have to make sure we're, like Prabhupada's making the point here, if you're not following that commandment, thou shalt not kill, where's your, and which is, you know, what God wants, and where's your question of loving him? So in the same way. Anyway, so that's all the points I wanted to make. I'll stop there. Does anybody have any question? Yep, question. You want to get a mic? You want to do a microphone, or do I have to repeat it? Okay. Yeah, if they get the microphone, then the people on the internet can hear, so it's probably better.
First of all, I want to say thank you so much for this lecture. It's been very helpful.
Thank you.
So you mentioned that the pure devotion is when we're satisfied with the service we have, right here, right now, like by distributing books or like being involved in the Krishna service, like in this material world, in this body, and that's a pure devotional, as I understood. But also there is another statement that we all would like, to go back to Godhead, right? So would you say that it's not like pure or real if, let's say, I have a desire, you have a desire, like not to get another birth in the material life, right? And that's true. Like, I can't deny that. I have that desire. But where is that line, would you say, where you, like, pure, or not pure, like, you have your own desire instead of Krishna's,
Yeah. Well, that's why I told that story. I was trying to reconcile it in some way, because if you go through all the different things Prabhupada said, all his books, all his letters, all his lectures, you could find a lot of statements to support the first point, which is that, yeah, it's good to want a desire to take birth again and again to preach. But you could also find a lot of things that Prabhupada said where he says, get out of here, go back. And as a material world, there's a condemned place, just finish your business, get out, go back to Godhead. You could find a lot of statements like that too. So is it a contradiction? Well, I was trying to suggest that, no, it's not a contradiction. It's kind of, they're both good, even though it's the two, seems like they're saying two opposite things. One is saying it's good to go on to come back and preach. The other is saying, no, finish your business and get out of here, go back to Godhead. So they're both, I think, good, bona fide spiritual desires. Can somebody, Dhrudakarma or Rabindranath, could say something more to further help on that point? Anybody want to help me a little bit, make that a bit? Dhrudakarma has got something he could say.
Whatever pleases Krishna the most is what one should do.
So we could have the desire, but ultimately we're not going to, we leave the final, obviously, the decision up to Krishna. I mean, if we're thinking we want to come back, but Krishna informs you, well, no, I just come back to the spiritual world, we just surrender and do that, or vice versa.
Or that Prabhupada sometimes said, he was in the spiritual world and Krishna asked him to come and write these books, and he was a little hesitant. Krishna said, I'll help you.
Right. Yeah, so Prabhupada surrendered and came here to the material world. I mean, it wouldn't have been, I don't think it would have been like a horrible thing if he said, I really want to stay here in the spiritual world, Krishna, and serve you. I love, serving you here. So, but no, he did what pleased Krishna more. Rabindranath, you got any comment about on this point? No? Prema Sankirtan, another question or comment?
But is it then, if you have desire to go home back to Godhead, you cannot go there if you don't have love. And also, so this is also love. And sometimes they ask Prabhupada, what satisfies the most if you love Krishna? He said, if you love Krishna. So both cases, you can say, on the same level even. To stay here out of love, to, distribute books, and in the same time, you won't go, go home back to Godhead. You cannot go if you don't have love. So both cases is okay.
Yeah, that's the point I was trying to make. It's not something worth arguing about. It's not something worth getting into an argument about with a devotee. They're both good because they're both motivated by, you want to go back out of love, you want to stay here and preach out of love. Sachin, right?
Thank you, Prabhu. You were mentioning that you said the purport is all about love.
Prabhupada mentioned it a few different times.
So we heard how many times Krishna has come to this material world in different incarnations to take us back to Godhead. And so I was just considering this point of the examples that you were giving also in the Mahabharata, the three different examples. And then a verse came to my mind where Krishna himself says, Konteya Pratyanihi name bhakta pranashati. And declare boldly, Arjuna, that my devotee will never perish. So then I thought, well, if most of us were with Krishna at one point, and we didn't, because you mentioned the way obedience, we didn't follow the rules or obey him, and then, boom, we ended up in the material world. So that Konteya Pratyanihi Name Bhakta Pranashati was not applicable.
The soul's eternal. It's not like, the person is going to get opportunities to correct themselves, you know, to correct whatever mistake they made that caused them to come here, the material world, and Krishna will be involved in assisting his devotee in his reformation. So in that sense, Krishna doesn't abandon the devotee. We all have free will. We're endowed with minute free will. Krishna doesn't interfere with that. That's an aspect of Krishna's love as well. But when a living entity does misuse his free will, then there's consequences. But Krishna is intimately involved with, the reformation process. And to that end, he manifests this material world. It's just really, on one level, it's to give the living entities a chance to try to act out their desires, fulfill their desire to be happy separate from Krishna. But ultimately, it's to give them a chance to reform themselves and go back to the spiritual world, because Krishna knows that, you can't become happy, independent from me. So he knows that the ultimate outcome is going to be that they're going to, living entities are going to realize that and want to go back to God. It might take a very, 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 very long time for some living entities. But anyway, that's the purpose underlying the real, what I consider the understand is the most important purpose of the material manifestation is to give the living entities an opportunity to reform themselves and go back to Godhead. So in that sense, Krishna hasn't abandoned his devotees. He's got him in this reform school. Is that okay, or does that satisfy you at all, or not really? Okay. All right, thank you very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Thank you for commenting that website.
Oh, yeah. It's Prabhupada.